Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The pandemic and resulting recession have hit Americans of color especially hard. For example, one analysis from Stanford University shows 40% of all Black-owned businesses have had to close their doors for good. Here in New Hampshire, minority owners wrote an open letter to the governor last month, urging him to pay more attention to how COVID relief monies are allocated to ensure minority-owned businesses are more widely included. Today in The Exchange, we check in with several of these entrepreneurs and how they're doing. And listeners, let's hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour is Deo Mawano. He's a business consultant in Manchester. Also with us is Sandra Almonte. She's owner of Don Quixote Restaurant in Manchester. Both of you, welcome. And Deo, let's begin with you. Businesses of all kinds have struggled with the economic fallout from this pandemic, as I'm sure you know, Deo. What in particular, though, have been the struggles of minority-owned businesses, Deo?
Thank you, Laura, for having me. I appreciate being on the show with you. I think a lot of the small minority business owners, they've struggled with the same thing a lot of different, you know, businesses have struggled with, but the challenge has been depending on their connection and their vast community to be connected to the greater knowledge around resources and where to go for information and how to get to it. I think that's been some of the biggest challenges, and the same challenges everyone else has been experiencing. And I think for the minority community in New Hampshire, it's really more about, expanding beyond your inner circle and try to figure out what are additional resources that are out there that's going to help them stay afloat.
So are you saying that minority-owned business businesses were just less aware of all the, all the federal loans and the state help and so forth, Dale?
Yeah, I would say, I'm not speaking for all minority business owners in New Hampshire, sure, because I don't know every single one of them, but I would say within an isolated community that I'm involved with, those that I spoke with, the challenges were just lack of knowing what information that was out there and how it pertained to them, or not really understanding the difference between, the federal and the state and where to go and what are the pre-qualifications and what paperwork to get and how to go about it. And I think one of the biggest challenge most of the businesses that I spoke to struggled with was, getting the information, but then understanding how the information pertains to them so they can qualify for those resources.
How much is that about, Deo, having a longstanding relationship with a bank?
I think 100%. I think it's very important for the type of relationship that you have with the bank institutions, because when a lot of the resources started to roll out regarding COVID business relief, they were being filtered through the banks, and depending on what connection individuals had with the bank determine how fast they got the information or if they got the information at all.
Well, and here's a study from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Minority-owned businesses are slightly more likely to report trying and failing to secure a loan to help survive the economic turmoil. Also from the U.S. Chamber, more minority businesses seem to need capital, with 19% planning on applying for a loan versus 6% of non-minority businesses. I also wonder, Deo, about the pandemic itself, the disease. We do see numbers that show it's hit communities of color harder. How does that affect minority-owned businesses?
I think it definitely impacts, right? If there's isolated community where people are impacted with COVID more than other communities, then depending on foot traffic, who's utilizing what services or who's buying what product, it's limited because people are more, reluctant to be or to put themselves out there in order to utilize the services that they've used in the past. And the other side of it is too, it's like a lot of minority communities are, you know, some are spread out throughout the state and some are in more closer proximity. You know, if I talk about Manchester, Concord, or Nashua. So the challenge is we haven't seen, hit New Hampshire as hard as it hit other places in terms of the impact of COVID on minority communities. But some of those issues have also just trickled over here in New Hampshire as well. And so I definitely feel like it's definitely has impacted everybody.
Yeah. Well, let's bring Sandra Almonte into it again. And Sandra, how do you see some of these issues that Deo raises, looking for capital and also, you know, the health impact of this pandemic on communities of color?
Good morning, Laura. Well, I basically echo a lot of what Dale is saying. The relationship with the bank is 100% necessary. Although they were sending almost about five of us, the ones that I know about, sending us to go online to apply for the different loans. And then most of us who are small business owners really don't have the time or didn't have the time to go through the whole process. And then some of us also didn't know the difference between the SBA loan, the PP loans, and all the other grants that were available. So it's been a little overwhelming doing business. The people resisting to wear masks, people resisting to keep the distance, so keeping just the guidelines, keeping people in order has been a little overwhelming.
Wow. So you've had trouble with getting customers to abide by the health recommendations, Sandra, at your restaurant. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. A lot of them would say, oh, well, if our president doesn't wear a mask, why should we? So that's been the hardest for us. Overall, our business has been booming. The first 2 months were really, really busy before the restaurants were able to reopen again. And I mean, that's due to, I've been in business for almost 20 years now. And also the Grubhub, the all the different delivery platforms really helped my business stay afloat. So I was able to not unemploy anybody. Everybody was, I kept everybody working. And unfortunately we closed for 2 weeks because we had a couple of our staff members who came back positive, including myself. So the middle of July, I closed for 2 weeks and I just reopened and we're starting up again.
So you had a couple of staffers get sick, including yourself,
yes,
Sandra.
Ma'am. Yes, yeah, that's
shut down the whole thing. And mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that the business went well during the pandemic. That was mostly takeout. And are you still doing that now, Sandra?
Yes, I'm still doing mostly takeout. We do mm-hmm. have, especially on the weekend, people who come in and dine in. But most of my business is takeout.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to remind our listeners that you can join us. We are looking again today on the Exchange at minority-owned businesses, how they are doing, given the twin hit of the pandemic itself and the recession falling out from that pandemic. And as we're hearing, there's a variety of experiences for minority-owned businesses here in New Hampshire. Both of you, let's go right to our listeners. And Courtney's calling in. Hi, Courtney. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Go ahead, Courtney.
Yes, so I'm calling in from Atlanta, Georgia, traveling here, and thank you for just bringing me in on the show this morning. And I can totally relate to what the minority business owners are saying in reference to resources and having funding, lack of funding available. What I found is that it was very challenging during the time when they were offering the PPP for business owners. I would do the research online and it would send you to so many websites and so many pages that by the time you didn't find exactly what you were looking for. And that was me starting without a bank. You know, I didn't know that you had to go right to a bank to be able to apply for this loan. So I thought that was a challenge as well. And it's frustrating when you don't see any any words or anything that identifies to small business owners. Like, it was for mainly the restaurants, the big corporations where the funding was being given to. So it wasn't specific to small business owners. So it's like at that point, you had to figure out what you were going to do for you to continue. And that was
Courtney,
frustrating as well. Yeah.
What's your business and where is it located?
So my business is the Courtney Daniel Brand, and it's located out of my office is in Exeter, New Hampshire. I'm traveling now. So yeah. I was initially supposed to be a guest on the show, but I didn't want to, wasn't sure. So what I still do, and had to take a pivot after COVID is work with business owners, creating custom stationery to help them send out thank you cards to their clients. And after COVID, I shifted more to the services that I offer, which is for my private clients of personal assistant services and virtual assistant services. And I've seen an increase in that. So, you know, it's just deciding what platform, you know, I wanted to do. But initially, it's custom stationery.
Sure. And I'm glad you called. One last question, Courtney. And I asked Daniel this at the beginning. You know, businesses of all stripes have really struggled. And I wonder what in particular about running a minority business has been a struggle for you, Courtney?
Oh, so I'm originally from Georgia, coming to New Hampshire. I would do the research, go to Google. And I said, you know, if you start with Google and Google can't help you, you know, there's going to be a challenge in front. And that's how it was. You know, I had been I'm in New Hampshire almost 10 years. And you would go search words like where are the minority business owners networking events? Where's the funding for them? Where can we meet? And it's still, to this day, not that many resources available. And now you can see the dates on it. I said, just look at the dates. Most of them are 2020, you know. So it's like now we do have these resources are becoming more readily available. But in the beginning, it's like, do minority business owners exist in New Hampshire? Where are they? Why aren't they being talked about? You know, they say the population is what anywhere between 1-2% for minority business owners. And I asked, like, if that's the number, where are they? Why aren't we catering to that percentage that's there to help nurture them, to help grow them and provide them the resources so that they could be successful just like any other business in the New England area?
Wow. Courtney, it's great to hear from you. Glad you called in. Sorry you couldn't join us for the
Thank
show,
you.
But we know you had to travel
no,
down.
Okay.
To Georgia. And Deo, this is where you come in. What about the connections that Courtney talks about between minority-owned businesses? You mentioned some are sort of clustered together in places like Manchester, but others are quite isolated.
Yes, 100%. Most businesses, minority business owners are super isolated. One of the reasons why is a lot of the businesses are, you know, they're up and coming, or they've been established for a little bit. So they focus a lot more on, you know, acquiring their customers, selling their product. So they're not involved with the chambers or the different associations that are out there. And some businesses are very isolated, even within their community, right? So they're doing a great job of providing services and products to their community. But outside of that, they don't, you know, they're not engaging with other communities. And so what ends up happening is everybody's spread out. So when a crisis happened, when people are all spread out and they're not, you know, unified within a certain, you know, association. So when the resources are being pushed out and people are pushing it out in, you know, their isolated association, then those folks that are not part of those groups, they're not getting those information. Even though the folks that are part of those association think that their approach are inclusive, but already they don't have a certain population of folks. So then at the end, people are not getting the information that they need at real time, like everyone else. So I think it's created, you know, people are more intentional around finding, hey, we want to be able to identify everybody. So I want to commend the Nashville Black Lives Matter movement. They started that Black business owner list that now the NAACP in Manchester has curated. It has over 150 different businesses in there. So those are the stuff that's happened just within the last couple of months, right? So this hasn't been in existence prior to that. So that connection and unification of knowing who's who and who's doing what. It's so important, especially during a crisis.
Oh, that's really interesting what you said. And Sandra, I'm curious, are you a member of any local business group like Deo mentioned? Sandra, you still with us?
Yes, yes, I'm here, Laura.
Hey, that's okay. Are you a member of any of the local business groups? As Deo mentioned, you know, people tend to get isolated, like the New Hampshire Restaurant Association or the Manchester Chamber of Commerce. Are you a member of any of those groups?
No, I am not, but I am a member of NeighborWorks Southern New Hampshire. I'm vice chair of that organization.
What do you think about what Deo says that, you know, these groups sometimes have the information, but, you know, sometimes minority business owners aren't members and don't get the information?
I totally agree with Deo. I am one of the ones who particularly really has never taken time to, other than now, to get more engaged in the community and with other and network with other organizations because I'm too busy running my own business. So, you know, you really never take the time out to get all the information you need and get educated on some of the important facts that affects us all.
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it, Sandra? Because, you know, you're so busy, you're probably working, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 hours a day running the business. You know there are resources out there. You know there are other people you could connect with, but you're too busy to do it.
That's right. If it wasn't for Deo, I wouldn't have applied for the PPP loan because I thought that the original one was already done. But then when he actually sent me a message and said, you know, I think you can still do this. So I'm greatly appreciated for that.
Deo, how comfortable are minority-owned business owners joining the Manchester Chamber of Commerce or the New Hampshire Restaurant Association or, you know, some of the other professional associations that we have in the state?
Laura, I think it's really more about knowing that organization exists for them too. So this is not saying that, you know, the business associations that are out there are being exclusive to minority businesses. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there's no cross like engagement and interaction for both parties to even know what the experience is like. And what ends up happening, I believe that those associations actually have more power because they're actually running the association. So I always feel like, you know, part of being inclusive is about going out of your way, right? So going out in the community, identifying different businesses that might not be part of your association and coming alongside them and saying, hey, this is what we do. And this is, you know, we would love to have you part of this. Because most of the time, those efforts don't happen. Most minority business owners that are, you know, isolated in within their own communities don't even know what those associations do and how they go about. So for most people, it's not even part of their consideration to think about, hey, you know, there's a Chambers around here, or there's a BEA, or there's the Restaurant Association, or there's this. It's not even part of their know about. So it's never in consideration. For some folks, depending on the industry that they're in, right? Like, you know, it might be the ones in the tech space, or it might be the ones, you know, in social services, you know, like management and business consultant, they might be more aware of it and have joined those organizations because it's just part of the, you know, the networking repertoire, right? But a small bodega owner or someone who runs a construction business or a painter or a landscape company, there's no connection and engagement with those associations for them to even consider it.
Wow. And like Sandra told us, when you're working long, long days trying to keep things running, you don't have the time to even do the research. And this gets into a letter that you wrote, Deo, an open letter to the governor earlier this summer saying, quote, deployment of state resources has fallen short when it comes to minority-owned businesses. So how so, Deo? What were you trying to get at there?
Laura, I think the big thing, what led for me to construct that letter in collaboration with so many different businesses throughout the state was really a sense of frustration. I started to send, Sandra mentioned earlier that I was sending her a message. I probably had a group of 15 to 20 businesses that I would send information out to that came out regarding state resources or federal resources, because I realized in the end of April, beginning of May, that certain folks were not getting this information. I'll come across somebody I know that owns a business. Hey, did you apply for this? Did you know that exists? They're like, nope, sorry, dear. What are you talking about? I didn't know that exists. So then that's when I said, all right, I got to start sending this information out to people at real time. So I started to see that play more and more. And Laura, at the same time, I started to see other groups and organizations within our state advocating for COVID resources directly to the governor. I saw the volunteer group did it and they were able to get 1.2 million. I saw other groups. So to me, I said, who's going to advocate for the small minority business owners? Because apparently there's a gap there that they're not getting this information. There's nobody advocating for them. And that's what led to the letter. I wrote that letter because I felt like everybody else are advocating for their constituents and for the people that they serve. But nobody's advocating for minority business owners. Everybody just assumes that whatever resources that are being put out, that it's going to reach everybody. Unfortunately, it wasn't. And that's what led to the letter.
Wow. Well, Sandra, you signed on to the letter. So how come? What'd you think?
I saw Dale's point, because I was actually one of those people who was unaware of so many different fundings that was available. And also there's a lot of other bodegas and other small Latino businesses that had no idea what was going on. So I was actually hoping for some of my peers to get some funding for, so they didn't have to close their businesses. So yes.
No, go ahead, Sandra. Yeah.
No, so I was just really trying to advocate for my peers.
Yeah. Well, Sandra, last question for you. What would you like to see happen from here on out to remedy some of these issues that we've been talking about?
Well, I would say maybe getting some type of education, some mentorship for some small businesses, just like the SBA or SCORE, I think is SCORE, the name of the organization. Getting some people into our community and trying to maybe help us or lead us in the right direction, even with accounting. You know, some people got some people did not get approved for the PPP because they were they didn't have enough employees, or they didn't have any employees at all, or maybe the accounting wasn't done correctly. So just getting some type of mentorship for small businesses like us would greatly be appreciated. And also maybe having in the Chamber of Commerce, maybe having a small, having someone in charge of the minority businesses and adding us in. I've, for years, like I said, I'm gonna be in Manchester. It's gonna be 20 years now in business. And there's a lot of organizations other than the Restaurant Association that I've heard, but nobody has ever reached out to us.
Mm. Sandra, it's really good to talk to you. And I'm glad your business is going well and that you've recovered and all that. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Sandra Almonte. She is owner of Don Quixote Restaurant in Manchester. Coming up after a short break, the owner of two antiques businesses shares his experience as a Black entrepreneur in New Hampshire. That plus more of your calls and comments. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Hey, it's Lauren Chulgin, NHPR political reporter, and we are so thankful for our members who make NHPR's news reporting possible. That includes our comprehensive coverage of the coronavirus pandemic. If you're looking for another way to help, you can donate that vehicle you no longer need to us. We'll pick up your car, truck, or RV and invest the funds right back into the programming you rely on every day. Go online to nhpr.org/cardonation to learn more. And thanks so much.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how New Hampshire's minority-owned businesses have been affected by the pandemic itself and the economic fallout from it. Listeners, join us with your stories, questions, comments. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Use Facebook or email exchange@nhpr.org. We're with business consultant Deo Moano for the hour, and joining us now is Lionel Lovelace. He's co-owner of the Collector's Eye Antique Shop in Stratham and Route 1 Antiques in Hampton Falls. And welcome, Lionel. It's great to have you.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good. What's been your experience, Lionel, as a Black business owner in New Hampshire, particularly in this field of antiques? I know you've been talking about this.
It's been really interesting. So the two businesses that we own, they've been established. They've been around for a long time. So one almost 50 years, one almost 46 years. So the customer base has always looked, you know, nothing like myself. So when customers come in and now see this person of color behind the desk or whatever, they're taken back. Majority wise, a lot of people have been welcoming, but there is that, you know, segment of people that just don't get it. They're like, why are you here? This can't be your shop, you know, simply because there hasn't been anyone that looked like me or, you know, in the antiques business around here.
You've related stories, Lionel, of when you and your husband have to leave the shop, go into people's homes to collect antiques. What types of reactions do you sometimes get, Lionel?
Well, overall, it's been pretty good. I mean, people have been like, wow, you know, I'm so glad you guys are here, because we're doing them a favor by coming and helping them analyze what they have. But right. Sometimes you get that impression of, I mean, because going into someone's home, that's a really intimate setting. You're going into their personal space. So sometimes we do get that vibe of, well, this person doesn't, they don't want me in there. Don't necessarily get the, you know, the gay thing or homosexual thing, but sometimes it's the Black thing. They look at me and it's like, yeah. Not sure if we want you in. And so sometimes there may be an instance where we're doing, you know, an evaluation on the porch. And if I get that feeling that's what's going on, I stop it right then and there, and we're not going to do it. I don't need that type of energy in my space, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And we talked earlier with Deo about how some minority-owned businesses felt like they face barriers regarding COVID-19, federal aid, state aid, the PPP loans, Main Street funds, CARES Act money, all these dollars that are supposed to be aimed at making the pandemic-related recession better for small businesses. What's been your experience, Lionel, with some of this funding?
I will say our experience has been pretty amazing. We, our financial institution, Bangor Savings in Portsmouth, soon as all the COVID stuff start happening, they've reached out immediately and they were right on top of it. They were helping us out, walking us through everything we needed to do. So I can see how other small businesses, minority-owned businesses, are not getting the help they need, simply because, I mean, I think the larger people will cater to larger businesses rather than small businesses. And that's unfortunate. And I think there's a light that needs to be shined. I think it needs to be spotlighted, showing that, hey, these small businesses are the backbone of these communities. So let's help these small businesses out first before we go to these larger businesses. But our experience has been pretty amazing, though.
Yeah. And Sandra earlier in our earlier segment talked about, you know, relationships with a bank. And Deo mentioned also that having that longstanding relationship with a bank is so important. So did you guys access any of these programs, Lionel?
We accessed a couple of small business grants. We didn't, we are fortunate enough not to have to do any of the loans simply because of the financial situation we're in. So we were okay. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't stressful. It was basically, We made the decision to say, hey, you know, there are other businesses that are worse off than we are. So let them get the monies that they need. So that's the way we looked at it. I mean, the stress was there. We were, you know, wondering, are we going to make it through this? But we did. We're here, and we're doing better than we've done before, I would say.
Wow, better than you've done before. So that's surprising, given that antiques are kind of a business where people like to come in and browse in person, and some people aren't comfortable going inside stores. So tell us a little bit more about that, Lionel, doing better than before.
We've made it comfortable. I mean, we require masks in both of our shops. Yeah. We require the 6 feet distance and all that. But it's just about letting people know that you care about their well-being. So when someone walks through the door, if they don't have a mask, we give them one. We just make them feel comfortable. We greet everyone that comes through the doors. And that's all it is. People just want to feel safe. So if they walk through your door, if you can acknowledge their presence and say, hey, I care about you, that goes a long way. So we're seeing a lot of young people come into the shop, which wasn't happening before, which is huge in the antiques industry. When you get young people wandering into shops and they're buying, that means the antique industry is actually, there's a new life coming, you know.
Wow, that's good to hear.
Yeah, if it's the same people coming into the shop, you know, the older crowd, that's not doing us anything. Yes, we love that older crowd, but we want to see younger people in exploring these shops because that's going to mean the longevity of the shop continues to go.
Why do you think younger people are coming into your shops, Lionel?
I think it's out of curiosity, but I also think maybe with the housing market the way it is, a lot of people are buying homes. And so they're looking to buy furniture that's, you know, that's a statement piece. That's a conversation piece. Because, I mean, you go into an antique shop, you can find anything. You can find something that you're going to take home and your friends are probably not going to have that piece. And then you can have this great conversation about this piece that you found at this amazing antique shop. And the curiosity is there. And it's like, wow, let me see if I can go treasure hunt. And that's what I call it. I call it a treasure hunt. Lots of people are out just wanting to take their minds off the craziness of the world and just for a second, you know, time travel with antiques.
Wow. Well, hang on, Lionel and Deo. Let's go to our listeners. And again, the number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email us with your thoughts about minority-owned businesses, how they are doing here in New Hampshire during the pandemic. Our email address, again, is exchange@nhpr.org. And both of you, let's go to Berlin. Lane is calling from Berlin. Hi, Lane. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So my husband and I, we own the Sixth Cafe here in Berlin, New Hampshire. We moved here in 2016 from Texas. We paid for the building out of pocket, so we had repairs, and everything is almost done. What we did was we bought into a gym to help pay for some of the repairs for the cafe, but we had to close the gym recently due to COVID. So the SBA loans we did not qualify for due to credit. So I just need resources on how to get tapped into the resources for minorities.
And what's the name of your cafe again, Lane?
The Sixth Cafe here in Berlin, New Hampshire.
Wow. Are you right on Main Street?
Yes, right on Main Street.
Okay. Excellent. I'm glad you called. And Deo, what do you think? Just people needing information. You've been stressing this throughout our whole conversation today, that there is help out there, but people just don't know where to go.
Yeah, I would say one of the things that happened after the letter was all this different financial institutions that reached out to me because they felt like it was almost like they got hit in the heart a little bit because they realized that they could do a little bit better. So recently, the BFA released the GAP grant. I believe it's $30 to $35 million, and it's supposed to be for businesses that either didn't get PPP or didn't get the Main Street Relief Fund. I believe it's still open. I'm not sure if it's still open or not, but the BFA had the GAP insurance. And I would also say places like the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, there's all these different organizations that are out there that are willing to support folks. It's just about getting to know them and figuring out ways to get the support. So I would definitely say recommend reaching out to the BFA or the NHCLF.
Okay, it's great to hear from you, Lane, and good luck to you opening up that business in Berlin. And here's an email from Katie who says, because I've had to take my annual event virtual, we decided to put together a virtual New Hampshire in a box, complete with New Hampshire cocktails, cheese, jams, honey, maple syrup. Katie says, I turned to the Made in New Hampshire website for sources, and there is very little diversity in the vendors list. It has been incredibly difficult to purchase things from minority-owned businesses in New Hampshire, and it seems like the tourism department or the governor's office should make a little more effort to get minority-owned businesses on the nhmade.com and make them easier to find. That relates earlier to Courtney's call, said she makes, she had stationery, making stationery in Exeter. So that's another minority-owned business that is making New Hampshire products. What do you think about this, Deo, that it could be a little more effort from the tourism department or the governor's office?
Oh, I definitely agree on that. And this has been what we've been trying to highlight, you know, the folks that are out there advocating. It's part of that inclusivity is looking at the way of the land and figuring out where are we missing, where are opportunities that we can expand. And I definitely believe that from the city municipality to the state agency, there has to be tangible action that comes out in order to create a space where people first of all know of businesses that are within their community that are led by minorities or people of color, and then at the same time being able to create platforms where people can have easy access to it. So a good example is in the Seacoast area, there was a mom's blog group that decided to create a list of Black and brown business owners. And that website, it's been shared so many different times, but that came out of a mom's blog group. How cool it would have been if it came out of, like a Portsmouth City or Exeter City. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like the states are, and this is also new, Laura, right? People, New Hampshire is a very white state. And as it's changing, you know, the new businesses and the different ways people of color are beginning to cultivate and create things of their own, it's brand new for people. People are not used to that. So automatically it's a lot easier for these entities to kind of not think about, hey, there might be an antique shop that's owned by a Black person, or there might be a stamp shop, or there might be a technology firm that's owned by a Black person, because people are just so used to how things have been for so long, where maybe some people's perspective is that most people of color are just working for other industries, that they don't own their own businesses. So I definitely feel like it's an opportunity here from a state perspective, but also from a city perspective, to be more intentional about creating tangible things that highlights and shows minority business owners.
Well, and Lionel, you've said you've had a largely positive experience running your businesses, but you've also said, Lionel, that the state needs to step up. So what do you mean, Lionel? What would you like to see happen?
Well, just basically, I mean, echoing kind of what previous speakers have said, you know, education-wise, moving here from Oklahoma, I had no idea what I was getting my hands into. I'm like, okay, I'm moving to New Hampshire. It's extremely white. So what is it going to be like? And so when that list came out of the, you know, minority-owned businesses in New Hampshire, it surprised me. I'm like, wow, how did I not know about this? So I think it comes from the education aspect. I think the state needs to do more, the state government needs to do more in highlighting these businesses. I think if they did, they would bring more people of color to the area to visit. I mean, my husband and I, we've decided that we're going to, you know, do a trip around New Hampshire and try to hit every single Black-owned business, minority business that we can, just to show support. I mean, that's huge. Having that list out there, if it had not been for that list, I wouldn't know about, you know, a couple of places that were nearby me that were Black-owned. I mean, I've been in these places before, but had no idea that these places were Black-owned.
What? Tell us a little bit more about the list, Lionel. It came up earlier, but I'd love to hear sort of how you came across it and what it has meant for your own particular business. And by the way, I want to let Lane know, who called, that we are going to put some resources on our website. So you can check that out later, Lane. Our website is nhpr.org/exchange. But go ahead, Lionel. What has the list meant to you?
The list has, the list brought me happiness, meaning that there's a lot more people out there than, you know, that's like myself in New Hampshire that have small businesses. The list came to me, it was, I guess, an email was sent to me on Instagram. I have another small business that people follow. And so I received this list and said, hey, you need to be part of this list of Black-owned businesses in the area. So I signed up And then just other folks from around the area just start sending me this email, say, hey, you need to sign up. You need to sign up. Not knowing that I already did, I was nominated for a couple of other lists, one in Boston and I think one up in Maine. And so it just, it brought, I mean, the word is happiness. There's no other way to describe it, just because so many people reached out, so many people cared, and there were so many people like myself who needed to have spotlight shined on them. And they need to be shown. They need to say, hey, I'm here. I have a business that caters to everyone. I was proud to see the list. I mean, for lack of words, I was just proud.
Anything else you want to add, Lionel, before we go?
I think in this day and age, we have, there's so much negativity going around, and I try not to focus on it, but it's, I mean, it's there. But when I have people come into my shop and they engage me in conversation about social issues, about, you know, what it's like to be a Black man here, and they're truly listening to what I have to say, it feels good. I understand that there will be change happening in the country, because if people aren't listening, we're not going to have change. But all this listening that people are doing, it just makes me, it gives me hope. It gives me hope that we are heading in the right direction. And that somehow, I mean, even with the list, with all the Black businesses and the people of color, I feel like we're going to be able to establish, you know, groups, especially here on the Seacoast. There's so many of us here. Let's just establish a group where we can sit and talk to each other about our issues, or just talk about the, you know, the best parts of having a business in New Hampshire.
Well, Lionel, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much.
That's Lionel Lovelace, co-owner of the Collector's Eye Antique Shop in Stratham and Route 1 Antiques in Hampton Falls. Coming up, a restaurant owner in Dover tells us how her brand new business is going. That plus a lot more of your calls and comments. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Chances are, you're working from home a lot more these days. Hi, I'm Sam Evans Brown, host of Outside In, and if you're like me, you're driving much less. And perhaps you're wondering what to do with that old vehicle you no longer need. Well, you can donate it to NHPR and turn those many miles into shows that you love, like Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Outside In. We'll take care of the paperwork and arrange to have it picked up for free at nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how New Hampshire's minority-owned businesses are faring, given that the pandemic and the economic fallout from it have hit Americans of color especially hard. Our phone number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Use Facebook or email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Our guest for the hour is Manchester business consultant Deo Mowano, and with us now is Jalon Hall-Johnson, owner of the Sassy Biscuit Company in Dover, a downtown breakfast, brunch, and lunch place. Welcome, Jalon. Good to have you.
Thank you.
So from what I understand, you opened up just 2 weeks ago after a delay due to the pandemic. Is that right, Jalon?
That is correct.
So seems like a tough time to open a new business. How's it going?
It's actually going really well. We've been really supported by the community, so we're grateful for that.
We've talked with our other guest, Jalon, about how much they were able or not able to access federal and state help. Again, the PPP loans, Main Street funds, and so forth. How much were you able to take advantage of these, Jalon?
Because this business is brand new, we weren't, for our Dover location, we weren't able to take to utilize any of the funds available for small businesses, unfortunately.
Because you were so new, or?
Yes, because there were no, the programs are for established businesses,
I
and
see.
That we didn't qualify.
Wow. So studies have shown, as I'm sure you're aware, Jalan, nationally, that minority-owned businesses have suffered disproportionately from the pandemic-related recession. What do you think is behind that, Jalan? And have you felt the same thing or not?
I think there's a lot that goes behind that. One is just the fact that minority-owned businesses just don't have the same access to resources as a lot of other or white-owned businesses. And so that is key to success. And so for us, I think that we have definitely been hit hard, but I'm a survivor. And so I'm the kind of person, if any means possible, we will do whatever we need to do to keep going. And so that's where we're at. It has definitely been a struggle, but like I said, we've made it through, and we've made it to the opening, and so far have been well received by the community. So we are definitely grateful for that.
People in Dover hungry for biscuits, I guess, and breakfast and lunch and brunch and all that stuff. The menu looks great, by the way. Do I have this right, Jalan? You have another location in Montana?
That is correct. Yes. Billings, Montana.
How is that location doing?
So that location, I would say we are probably about 60% of our normal sales, our annual sales. We're making it, but it has definitely been a struggle throughout the pandemic, for sure.
Because people just aren't going out to restaurants, or?
There's a couple different things that that play into that. People aren't going out to breakfast as much because they can, you know, it's one of those meals that people can cook themselves at home. You eat a bowl of cereal, crack an egg open. They can handle that. And I think also we serve a very niche market. And so if we're not getting that tourism in and people aren't coming to Billings, then we're missing out on a lot of that revenue. I also think the other part of it is that we serve a very unique type of food that's not that a lot of people aren't accustomed to in that area. And so so that people tend to gravitate more towards what they know. And so we've lost some of that business as well.
Yeah, and focusing on breakfast, boy, you're right. If people are working from home too, you know, there isn't that sort of habit of just, hey, I'll swing by, you know, the Sassy Biscuit and pick up a biscuit because I'm at home, so
correct.
I'm not going to do
yes.
that. So yeah, that must be that would be a hit there. Hang on with us for a moment, Jalan, and Deo, you too. We've got another caller. This is Allison in Northampton. Hi, Allison, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you all. And I
sure.
really appreciate everything that's been talked about in the show. And I just wanted to build off of what Deo was talking about earlier about professional associations and minority-owned businesses may not even know that they're there. And we just want to take it a step further and state that some of the stuff I've heard across the state through my work is hearing that even when they are at the table, because they are, as we keep saying, minority, their voices is often one of many. And they aren't always having their issues centered for solutions. So they can feel silenced and shut down. So even if they do know they exist, they may not be able to have their needs met because it's just not what the rest of the folks around the table are experiencing in the same way. And they may not want to put resources towards that to address them.
Wow. So what do you think should happen that might make that better, Allison?
Well, realize that there are, as we say, not as large of a population, but their needs are still incredibly important, and work to reallocate resources to recenter their needs, because as we all know, hopefully that addressing whatever needs may happen from the one person does ripple out to the rest of us. So ensuring people's voice feels heard and inclusive, I think, will pull people in even more so.
Do you have experience with this yourself, Allison?
I would say, I identify definitely as white, but I have heard this from other minority groups, so LGBTQ folks, which is more my my group and women, obviously, you know, it's very easy to get your voice quiet or shut down and you just kind of sit at the table without really having an impact. I think, and I know that that happens in this state from implicit bias and other things, other factors.
Well, Allison, it's good to hear from you. And Jalon, you know, we talked with our other guests earlier in the show about some of the professional associations, especially the local chambers of commerce and so forth. I know you just opened up this shop, so, you know, you may not have had a chance to engage with any of these groups, but what do you think about that as a minority-owned business person joining the local chamber or some of the statewide associations?
I think it's absolutely essential to become part of the community. You know, number one, like I stated earlier, resources are just imperative for the success of any business, especially minority or owned businesses. And so while I say that, I haven't joined any of them here in New Hampshire, but in our Montana location, we definitely are very much a part of all of those different associations, just because they're a wealth of resources. And, you know, networking is extremely important, and making sure that you build a community around you that support you and can help you sort of navigate through the unknowns of a business. So I would say absolutely essential to any business.
Well, Jalon, it's good to talk to you. And again, good luck, given that you just opened up 2 weeks ago. I'm glad to hear it's going well for you so far in Dover.
Well, thank you.
That's Jalon Hall Johnson, again, owner of the Sassy Biscuit Company in Dover. Deo, a couple more emails that I'd like to throw at you before we close out. Here's one from Mark, who says, I'm a Black education consultant based in Rochester for 25 years. Mark says, I conduct a project-based STEAM program with students in person in their traditional class setting. I was scheduled to be in Connecticut on March 12th. I was told on the 10th that outside visitors would be prohibited, and I haven't been in a classroom since. Mark says, I developed a remote version of the program, but with things changing every day, teachers and administrators are understandably reluctant to commit to extracurricular activities. Mark says, I don't have employees, so don't qualify for paycheck protection. If this virus isn't brought under control soon, I'm in big trouble. Wow, Mark, thank you for writing in. And Deo, I know you aren't here on the show to give individual business advice, but just broadly, what do you think about Mark's email?
Yeah, Mark's email resonates with me very much so, because a lot of my service is very similar to his work. And when I, you know, I remember going into my last presentation in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, and I'm driving home, I'm hearing the potential of a 2-week shutdown. I'm like, a lot of my clients is in real life, physical spaces. But I would definitely encourage Mark to continue to think about what differentiates his services, because schools are out there definitely looking for tools and resources that will help their students better engage. And I think he can't give up, because he's already had those experiences that he's been able to do for so many years with his work. He just needs to figure out, you know, where the best place to position his work so schools can benefit from. I mean, this is half of my work is working with schools, and the other half is working with businesses and communities. So I will definitely encourage them to continue to try different modalities of positioning his content, and maybe even making his content a little bit smaller, right? So if it's typical consultant is, you know, 3 to 6 months long, maybe he should think about it from, you know, a 1-month training process where it's more bite sizes, because a lot of the schools, they don't know what's going to happen in the future. So a lot of their decision is based on now.
That's interesting. And I would also encourage Mark to contact New Hampshire Employment Security if he hasn't already, because they have rolled out more recently programs and assistance for self-employed people like you, Mark. So thank you for writing in. Here's another email from Michael Deo. He says, wouldn't a state or local government list of businesses owned by people of color be a tacit endorsement of businesses based on race? Isn't that a discriminatory practice? Michael asks. And Deo, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the big thing is this happens all the time when you start talking about minority experiences or Black and brown community experiences. You know, people sometimes feel like it's exceptionalism. But it's also very important to understand the way of the land, right? When we live in a state where it's 92% or 94% white, most of the experiences that are emulated is based on that majority group. So by creating a list of business owners that are Black and brown or minority, that's not making an exception. That's just making sure that they're also highlighted, because we know that the way of the land typically doesn't consider them. Just because it's not the base, right? So by creating a list is just saying, hey, here are different businesses that are minority owned as well. It's a very different experience if you're an inner city where there's ton of, you know, Black and brown business owners like Boston or wherever other places are, where when you go to a state list, you're going to see all those businesses because it's part of the experience of everyone. But when you're in a state where it's predominantly white, unless you have someone that's, you know, being intentional on making sure that everybody's included, as we know that tends to not be the case, that's what leads to things like this. Even the letter itself, like, I shouldn't have had to put the letter together, because if the resources were being disseminated or the information was being disseminated in a way that it was inclusive, then everybody would have been able to, you know, get the information that was needed. The fact that it wasn't, that's what leads to things like this, where it's saying, hey, can we make sure that everybody's included as well?
That open letter, again, that you wrote to Governor Sununu. What about private entities, Deo, you know, the local chambers of commerce, the statewide business associations? Have you heard anything from them since you started talking about this?
I have, Laura. I've had from tech companies to, you know, like I mentioned earlier, financial institutions. I've even had city agencies have reached out and said, hey, we know, you know, your letter touched a nerve. We know we can do better. How can we do better? And a lot of the folks that I met with, it was really about, you know, what do they have capacity in implementing now that will include an inclusive approach? And the hope is, you know, the more you become aware that you actually have action behind. And my key thing is always around relationship building. You have to be able to build relationship in order to know other people's experience. So what you create, the services you provide, the products that you provide, it's an inclusive that includes everybody.
Well, it's really good to talk to you, Deo. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Laura. I appreciate being with you for the last hour.
That's Deo Mowano. He's a business consultant in Manchester. And once again, we will put some of the resources that came up during the hour on our website. It's nhpr.org/exchange. You've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.